And one of the things that I thought was that thinking, the mind, is a bad thing. That if I could just get outside of this whole thinking thing, then I would be okay. That I would be in some kind of transferred state of mind, and I would float along the ground without any problems. Just got to get past the thinking. And I remember maybe 12 years ago, hearing about this word citta, this idea that the heart and mind combine together to allow for liberation. This is such a strange concept to someone who had decided thinking was the problem. And somehow or another, if I kept trying to get to the heart without the mind. But in this third, is it tetrad? Is that how you say it? Tetrad of the Anapanasati Sutta, I can see why the heart-mind together so interconnected. Because when I learned about the heart-mind, then it sort of put a different spin on this practice that I was doing. Something's different about this. As long as we think the mind is the enemy, then we keep trying to run away from it. We keep trying to get away from the limitations of the mind. Because we all know the limitations of the mind. It's always complaining. It's always judging and whining and fussing about this and that. And it's always about us. We were the ones that were wrong. It's just this constant bickering and whining and complaining. And we try to get away from that. Of course, I'm sure you've noticed that it's not going anywhere. It's sort of like chasing a dog chasing their tail, right? It's forever right there. Tail's not going anywhere. Mind's not going anywhere. But what if it were possible? What if we could see that it was possible to get to the heart through the mind? That we could get to this liberated space through the mind, not away from the mind, through the mind. I begin to realize that that is a completely different way of looking at things. So I want to give you a story as an example. I grew up in a very abusive house. My dad was over the top crazy. He was violent, pure and simple. But he had a lot of rules that you can easily violate and get in trouble. So as a kid, I didn't want to break the rules. I mean, none of us did. I mean, I grew up with a lot of siblings, so none of us wanted to really break the rules. Except I had a problem cleaning my room. I would stuff my stuff under the bed. I would stuff my stuff between the mattress and the box spring. But I would not clean it up. And I would get in trouble, whoopings after whoopings after whoopings, yelling and screaming and threats that my father would make, and still I would throw my stuff everywhere. And then as soon, he was from the military, so he's always having these inspections. Yeah, so he forgot he wasn't actually in the military anymore. He would have these surprise inspections, and I would stuff everything to the back corner of the bed on the floor. I'd stuff it back there. I would get in there and push it in so he would not see it. And of course, he would get on the floor, look, I'm in trouble. So I created this story about myself that I was a slob. Everybody in my house knew I was a slob. I'm a slob. That's what I am, a slob. I just can't keep my stuff together. So, of course, when I started practicing and doing all my get my life together, I'm older now. I want to stop being a slob. I want to stop being that person. I want to be somebody else. So I tried to clean my room up. The rest of my house was usually always clean, but the bedroom, mess. So I kept trying to clean it up. I paid my kids. I have two boys. I paid them to clean up my room for me. They loved it. They told me that that was the best job ever because they knew they were always going to get paid. Because that's true. They would clean up my room. I would pay them money. My room would be so beautiful. And then within 3 days, it's all messed up again. Because I'm a slob. That's why. And then one day, I was with a therapist of mine. Of course, you know, when you go through drama like I went through, you're going to have some therapy to kind of settle it down. So I'm sitting with my therapist, and I'm saying, I don't know how it came up, but I made this statement. Oh, I'm a slob. That's why. And she said, you don't seem like a slob to me, Tori. You seem like you're pretty, you know, orderly. I'm like, no, my room's a mess all the time. It's always been a mess. It's just that way. That's the way I am. So she began to ask me a series of questions about when my room was a mess, why my room was a mess. And I'm not going to go through all the therapeutic details of it. That's a little bit boring. But the point was, she said, I don't think you're a slob, Tori. I think you're rebellious. And I'm thinking, what do you mean rebellious? She's like, well, just think about it. If everybody had their rooms all cleaned up when you were at home and everybody's following orders, you're just like stuck in this system pretending like it's not really a violent house. But if the house is really chaotic and your room is chaotic, you're kind of like sharing that idea. And all the trouble you would get in, and you'd still keep the chaos. Right? There's chaos everywhere. I'm going to get in trouble. I'm keeping the chaos. She said, what if your room is telling you that there's chaos? You need to fix that first, and then we'll clean the room up. I never thought of that. Right? So I go home, and I'm looking at my room. Now, by the time I saw this therapist, I mean, I've seen a lot of therapists, by the time I saw that one, I was in my 40s. I've been seeing therapists since I was in my 20s, and it's all a mess all the time. I go home, and I look at my room, and of course, it's a mess. So I start thinking, what is out of congruency in my life? What is not congruent between the way I'm living and who I am? Found a couple of things that seem to be not flowing right, and I started dealing with those. And all of a sudden, I had this energy to clean up my room. It's like the part of me that was 13 is trying to help me see that, you know, messy life, messy room. Messy life, messy room. So now, whenever I look at my room and it's like crazy, I don't think, oh, I'm a slob. I think, oh, something I'm not really dealing with here. And it shows up in the room. In some respects, that's what citta is for me. It's when you begin to let yourself look at the places where you are stuck and stopped in your movement, you're not breathing, you're not singing, you're all tight. When we begin to look at that and let that thing that's happening, not just the judgment of it, there I go again, but you look at that aspect of you, that thing that you think is you, and let the heart hold it with you. So it would be like being patient, still, soft with the very part of you that you don't like. It's a relationship between the mind, which has judgment, opinions, I don't like, I like, and the heart, which has this equanimous, accepting, loving, kind way of looking at life. You put those two together, and actually, all of that so-called criticism, blaming, shaming we do in the mind doesn't have to destroy us. It could be telling us something very important. That anxiety you've been running from could be telling you something very important. But if we don't soften around it enough to see it and take a look, it's been with you since you were a kid. You know it. You've been running from it for years. Maybe if you just soften a little around it, not so much tension around it, then it can tell you what it really needs to tell you. I think that is what this relationship is with citta. I wish in the Theravadins we talked more in citta. It's not like the Theravadins don't use this heart-mind concept, but they don't say it so much like heart-mind. They just say the heart part. And we still get stuck in this idea that the mind is the problem. But actually, the mind is telling you something, and it won't go away because that 13-year-old really is trying to support me. But we need to soften a little to hear it. Soften a little bit around this mind. When we start softening a little around the mind, then our ability to trust the world gets easier. The mind cannot trust the world. The mind has too much judgment about what works and what doesn't work. It thinks it knows what's good for me and what's not good for me. And the reason why it thinks it knows is because you can feel it in the body. You don't feel comfortable, not good for you. You feel comfortable, good for you. It's pretty simple. But the mind can judge something as being not good or good on a whim of something it decided from years ago. So I always tell this, at some point I'm going to try this because I've talked about it so much, but I do not like artichokes, mostly because I don't like the word artichoke. It just sounds like a really, really nasty food because the word sounds so bad. So if I look at something, a dish, somebody brings some salad or something, we have a potluck, and I see the word artichoke there, not going to eat it because it's not good. The mind does that. It decides something. Who knows why it decided that, but it makes a determination. That's not good. And then we're stuck with it. We're stuck with that opinion. I don't get to choose. If I see it, I'm not going to eat it. In fact, it's so quick that I can see the word without even realizing I saw the word. I'm not going to eat it. For some reason, I don't want to eat that salad. I don't know why. I can see an artichoke leaf in there. I'm not going to eat it. I've never actually tasted them. See how bad it is? It's not that I don't like it because it doesn't taste good. I don't like it because I don't like the word. That's how the mind makes its associations. If I soften around it, if I soften, I can try it. That's what we're looking to do here. Soften a little bit around these opinions so we can begin to trust the world. I can trust if I can soften a little bit around it. Because the heart is not afraid. The heart is not lonely. The heart is not sad, scared, worried, troubled, dread, all of those emotions that we think is a felt sense, is a thought in the mind associated to some sensations, some words crossing through the mind, images crossing through the mind. The mind gives it a judgment. We think that's what it is. Now we're in it. But since the heart doesn't have any concept of fear, loneliness, dread, worry, sadness, anxiety, it doesn't have any understanding of happiness, joy, you know, pleasure either. It just experiences whatever it is, and this is what it is. And it's okay with that. Difficult, not difficult, it's okay. So if we could combine the heart's ability to step into anything and accept it with the mind's kind of cognizing, telling us what's actually going on, the details of it, you could see how Buddha's middle way, taking both the mind and the heart together, you could see how we could liberate the mind. But that liberation comes through what we are experiencing. It comes in the midst of that experience, softening around it, letting the heart's capacity to accept whatever without judgment, and then kind of looking at it from that place. That's what we're doing. There is nothing that happens to you. There is no experience. No experience, nothing that happens to you that is outside of liberation. In any moment, in any experience, in any situation, in any sensation, any thought, any emotion, anything, in any moment, if you could bring both the mind's judging details and the heart's willingness to just accept and be with it together, that moment can liberate you. We just have to learn how to trust it, to learn how to trust that even in the most difficult of times, we can be soft with it and hold it in a gentler way and free ourselves. That's what we're looking for, is how to be soft, how to be kind, how to be friendly with even our most difficult moments. One last thing. Everybody in this room has tried the pleasurable way for liberation. It ain't working. We've been trying to get pleasure our entire life. It's not working. But we have plenty of unpleasant, plenty of it, right? It's always here. It seems like there's more unpleasant than there is pleasant. And the pleasant stays a second, and then the unpleasant lasts forever, right? So I thought to myself several years ago, it's going to be in the unpleasant that I'm going to find some liberation. It's not going to be in the pleasant. It doesn't even stay around long enough for me to enjoy it. So since you have so much difficulty in your life, so much unpleasantness, so much mess that you have to deal with, why not see if holding that in a softer, kinder way builds up enough trust for us to actually liberate the mind and stop running from it? So I'll offer that for your reflection. We'll sit a little bit. Sit still for a second. Oh, that's right. We probably should do it now. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to give us a little time to see if there's any questions before lunch. We'll take some questions, answers, or comments, or reflections, whatever comes to you, and then we'll have a little sit before lunch. Yeah, you can turn the light on. Do you want to turn the light on? Okay, good. Or probably the ones on the side wall, on the other side. Those two. Mm-hmm. Okay, so does anybody have any questions?
I have a reflection.
Sure, go ahead.
Yesterday we talked about when we stop singing. And,
I'm sorry. I'm not even talking to you. I'm talking to the other people. It's like I'm trying to be in the moment. I had it. Okay, I'm so sorry. I wasn't being disrespectful. Oh my God, was that not beautiful? Yes, it is.
And he's also multi-ethnic, so there's a lot of what do I do as a white mom. So I was chanting and singing and speaking my voice, which often I choose not to do in support of other people. I was loud. And he made the comment that I didn't have rhythm, which is...
Oh my God.
And
thank you for sharing that. That's absolutely beautiful. That is, I couldn't have said it better myself.
And yesterday was my first time here.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's your Sangha then. Yeah, good, good, good. Anyone else?
I just.
I don't know. I had a cheeky thought. I'll share it. And the next time your son tells you you haven't got rhythm, you just tell him two black women have just taught you the rhythm.
Tell him.
Yeah.
So I also have a reflection of how yesterday impacted my life.
I like that. I like that. It's almost like if you take in two breaths, you can give one away. Take in two, give one away, right? That's very beautiful.
To share that there is no liberation if others aren't liberated with us. That it's impossible to have liberation if others aren't liberated with us, which is why the work is with ourselves. She showed we work on ourselves. We liberate others because we communicate differently. We come into connection differently. That's why, you know, just the work on ourselves is just so important if we want true liberation.
See if there's anything. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Towards the end of the day, you had said, "Oh, I kind of made a mistake in the morning. I was confused and felt agitated and so forth." And one of the reasons I came to this retreat is because I have such a difficult time even hearing the word Trump. Mm-hmm. And that does not seem like a viable response. I think it's in the area of ignorance, you know. And yet, it was clear to me that something kept arising within me that was so agitating that I had a similar response to, you know, when friends would start talking. And I want to be there, I want to be available for my friends, at least, if not to information coming in that's real. And so I've been sort of beating myself up about this, and I thought, well, if I come to this retreat, something will shift in terms of my knowing about what this is for me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, this is unbearable. But actually to feel, what is it like to feel the grief? And so that's what I did last night, was just be with as much as I could. And to, I'm not saying I had a great breakthrough, but to recognize that that's how it has to go for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. So for those of you that didn't hear, she was saying that she... So for those of you that weren't here yesterday, right before Vimalasara and I got here in the morning, we checked the news and found out about this ban. So there was this weightedness that just kind of got dropped on us right before we're going to start this 2 days. So when we came in, we were carrying the heaviness of that and trying to figure out how can we talk into this idea of liberation when we're weighted down with such a rage, anger, you name it. And so that's what we spoke into when we first started. So she was commenting on that and the fact that towards the end, many of us had realized that we had freed some of that. That there, being together as a group, we were, we didn't know what was necessarily happening in the news after hearing about the ban. But there was a sense of freedom that had come from our practicing together. And part of that came from Vimalasara just saying, hey, I'm grieving here. I didn't even bring it up, but she did. Vimalasara just said, hey, we're grieving here. There's a problem, and this is very hard. And so we're going to practice with that together throughout the day. So I think what you're sharing is that then by the time she got home, she actually was able to connect. So many of us cannot connect with all the level of anger that's out there. It's like we're almost like want to get the covers and hide under there and say, I just don't want to see it. I can't see it. I can't do it. And she was able to connect with this, the grieving process of what's going on. This is a difficult time for us. And so grieving that is what's going to free us up so that we can actually do something about it, whatever that looks like. We don't always know. But then after that, to go home and see how quickly and how massive some of these airport protests were, just so quick, 4 hours. It took my breath away looking at some of those protests. SeaTac, Seattle, Boston, New York, Kennedy was unbelievable. And then to have the ACLU just quickly file that action, I mean, the whole thing felt like, oh, that's right, it's not me having to fix Trump by myself, because I think he's going to take me down. You know, I don't think I can do it. I'm not that ruthless. So there was this sense that, oh, my God, we are not doing this by ourselves. And I think that was it, right? Just that sense of realizing that's my way. I'm going to have to go into this grief, and I'm going to have to make space to be able to do this. So factor it in that it needs a little space in order for us to do this. And sometimes maybe you can only really step out there one day, one time, and then we'll wait a little bit before we go back again. That's good. Anybody else? Does someone else have their hand up? Oh, okay, good. Good. Yeah.
And I can just say for my part, I sometimes struggle with like how to have the energy to do everything, right? You want to do everything. And I think I'll spend a lot of time thinking about where is the overlap between activism and Buddhism and, you know, and the work we're doing in the world. And just, really introverted, so after a day like this, I want to just like, and I had so much energy. I left, we took our dog to the vet, we got on, you know, the link and went to the airport, and it was just like a different. My partner was like, you should do that every Saturday.
Yeah.
That doesn't always happen. And it's
no.
For everyone, right? What needs to happen? For me, that was my experience. And I'm really grateful for that.
I have a couple of things that I want. Well, one thing that I want to say and one thing that I want to ask. The first thing I want to say is Terere and I had the conversation yesterday, and I think it's really important for us not to assume that all Buddhists don't vote Trump or support Trump, and to kind of really hold that in the space. I mean, for all we know, there could be people here who did vote Trump. Hopefully we've shifted, but if you've stayed, then you've obviously shifted a bit, but just not to, I think it's really important to remember that, and yeah, and for myself to remind myself of that. The second thing, I think the time is right to ask this question. I haven't consulted with Terere. I'm sure we'll debrief about it at the end of the day, temperature rising in the room. And I really, it's to each of you to take pride in raising your hand. So I'm going to ask a question, and I just want you to look around. I mean, we're talking about identity and the positiveness of identities. All of our identities can be positive, and knowing the limitations of that. But I don't know who's in the room. We cannot, we can assume, you know, we're in the room and we can assume this person is this, this person is that, but we just don't know. So I'm going to ask initially, raise your hand if you identify as white. Raise your hand. And raise your hand if you identify as a person of colour. And raise your hand if you don't identify with either of those labels. Yeah. And raise your hands if in your own identity it's been confusing whether to identify as a person of colour or as a person of as a person who's white. Raise your hand. So it's not so clear cut, really, is it? And I knew that for me, it's just very interesting just looking, because for myself, you know, I get curious, you know, I do sometimes, you know, because I was raised by white people, I had to learn to find familiarity at what I was looking at. So I'd be looking for things that a person of colour looking in the skin or features, and I could always out the white people who identified as white, but they actually had people of colour relatives in their family or whatever. Do you know what I mean? I think they hated me. I remember once being at the Women's Pond in London, which is a place where women go and swim, and this friend I'd had, and she, you know, she looked really white, but I can remember her undressing, and this was this African body. It was like, wow. And I said, that body. And she just broke down in tears, because the secret in her family was that the grandmother was African. And she held it. I could see it in the body. You know, used to, you know, looking at that body. So, yeah. So thank you. Thank you all for raising your hands and celebrating our identities, celebrating, yeah. And I would raise my hand. You know, at one time I passed as white. It's interesting. You can look at me as dark as I am, as black as I am. I can still pass as white. Okay, I know how to pass as white, and I did. I at once upon a time I didn't feel comfortable in a room of black people. And I knew how to pass as white. I was white-minded or a coconut, you know. And I think I'd find it quite difficult now to do that, but there are certain things that we can do to pass. And we do that because to protect ourselves, to look after ourselves. And there were some people who passed as black. You know, there are. I mean, that it hit the news last year, didn't it, with the woman.
Oh, that's right.
Who'd been... Yeah, what was her name? Rachel, that's it. Passing, so, yeah, this thing of... And some of us pass as men and some pass as women, so there has been this whole culture there. I mean, there's this amazing story of a black woman who, because she was so light-skinned, that the way she escaped slavery was... She passed as a man, as a white man. She was this black woman, passed as a white man with her husband as her black slave. And that's how they escaped slavery.
That's the way to work it.
Yeah. Positive. Yeah. Okay. Some meditation.
We do. I just want to answer one question.
Now, before we go into meditation, I want to answer your question here. Because I hear that a lot. People say, how do I be both an activist and a Buddhist? Mm. And I think I have finally figured it out, at least for me. You practice Buddhism and you do your activism. Mm. That's it. Not really complicated. Mm. Just keep practicing and keep activating. You know, being your activist. Keep doing your social justice and keep practicing. You do them both. And somewhere the cheetah is going to figure that out.
Because it's not dualistic.
Yeah, it's not dualistic. You just do them both.
Mm.
Okay.